Good afternoon, everyone. And thank you, Jessa and Rhonda. A very beautiful song. I could have sat and listened to a few more. Good combination. Some of you probably have, in the past, seen the movie A Few Good Men that starred Tom Cruise and Jack Nicholson. They have reruns periodically on TV, so occasionally I'll view it again. There's a part of it that I think is really, to me, kind of highlights the entire movie. Tom Cruise is a Navy lieutenant who's trying his first major case. And in this case, two of the Marines in a particular company were accused of giving treatment to one of their platoon members, which was referred to as a code red. It was an unofficial way of reprimanding people that were falling behind or were kind of affecting the entire platoon's performance. And in any event, while they were administering this code red to one of the platoon members, they put rags or something in his mouth that, because of an allergy he had, resulted in him suffocating. And so they were on trial for murder. Everyone up and down the line denied that a code red had been issued, including the commander of the base, played by Jack Nicholson. I think the highlight to me was the last 5 minutes of the film, where Tom has requested that Jack Nicholson be a witness, so he's flown all the way from Cuba to appear on the stand. And at first he outsmarts Tom under heavy pressure and being unnerved by being caught in a lie that he made. He finally excuses his behavior as being necessary for national defense. Tom, upon hearing this, gets up closely and quietly said, "Did you order the code red?" And Jack responds, "I did what I needed to do to defend our country." "Did you order the code red?" And you could see he was just bristling because he was felt insulted by this whole line of question. And he said, "You're blankety blank right, I did." Which, of course, ended up in that admission of guilt ended up in his subsequent arrest, because that was something that should not have happened. I mean, it was an unofficial method of punishing, but watching Tom elicit that final admission and the crescendo of emotions leading up to that and his subsequent arrest, to me, were the highlight of the movie. His pride, Jack's pride, led to his downfall. There is a lot of esprit de corps in the Marine Corps, and there are a lot of, when you watch Marines as they walk or stand at attention, they're very proud, and that's something that they've learned. I once heard a minister say that about a certain man in the congregation. He said, "You know, he's never going to speak in this church as long as I have anything to say about it or do anything about it." And I'm not quite sure why he was so dogmatic in that statement. He didn't elaborate on it. He didn't give any reasons for it. This particular man had kind of an in-your-face personality. He was pretty outgoing. He was very vocal. He was never reticent or hesitant about expressing his position, regardless of what it turned out to be. If you were to look at him, you would say, well, he's a typical Class A personality. You know, he's one of the doers. He's one of the shakers of the world. He's out there making things happen. He's doing things. And don't misunderstand, there's certainly nothing wrong with having people like that in the world. I mean, that's one reason that things get accomplished. You need people like that. However, in his case, he was so intractable that when it came to an opinion, it was kind of like it's my way or the highway. And that was his approach to everything. And that came to or became a problem, especially when he became openly critical of the minister. You can't have that kind of thing happen in a congregation. And it was very sad to see his talent that he had going unused because of his pride, because he was proud. And I'm sure that someone at some point had taken him aside and had discussed this with him and pointed it out, but for whatever the reason, he chose to ignore it. How many people do you know who have let pride ruin either a relationship or a career? How many bright careers have been scuttled before they ever got off the ground because of some kind of unwarranted pride? Maybe this has even happened to you. You know, I think we've all seen examples of this in the workplace. I know I certainly have. A number of years ago, a person who reported to me was kind of a loose cannon in a way. He would visit a branch away from the main office, and it was always rather questionable as to what he was doing while he was there. He was presumably out generating new business. However, the only problem was we never saw any of the new business come in. And there was a rumor that he was involved in doing his own real estate or working on his own real estate. It's been quite a while ago, so I don't remember exactly how that was verified. But at some point, and he was pretty sloppy about the way he worked. That was just kind of his persona. One day I found a very large check on his desk that had been sitting there uncashed for over a month. One of the customers had given him this money to invest. And if you look at the value and what the CPI is today from that date, it was probably worth somewhere an equivalent of $600,000. Now, if you look at interest rates today, that may not yield a significant amount, but back at that time, even a 4 or 5% rate of interest was a significant amount for that. And the problem with that was we were fiduciaries. We were held to a higher standard because we were investing people's money. We held ourselves out to be professionals. And here he was conducting his business on a very, very sloppy and unprofessional way. He was the first person I ever fired fortunately, over my career, there have only been two or three, but he was the first. He was a man about my age. He had a young family, and I worried about doing this the entire week before it happened. What's he going to do? You know, he's got a family to provide for, and, you know, maybe we can work with him and maybe change him or straighten him out. However, enough time had elapsed, I could see that that just wasn't going to happen. So finally, Friday night of that week, I had to let him go. And it was a difficult thing. It was a hard thing for me to do. But it was the right thing to do. And here again, this man's pride prevented him from listening to what others had to say and from paying attention to some of the things he should do. He was doing his own thing. Unfortunately, his own thing ended up in him losing his job. And at that particular time, fortunately in the Seattle area, it wasn't a time when there was a lack of employment. And he very soon got a job working in a real estate company, which is probably where he should have been to start with. Turn to Proverbs 11, verse 2. Proverbs 11, verse 2. When pride cometh, then cometh shame. But with the lowly is wisdom. You see someone who is proud about something, I'll guarantee you, if that is not corrected at some point, there's going to be shame associated with and attached to that person's life. But with the lowly is wisdom. If you want to be wise, then you look at what's going on when it comes to being proud. If you're lowly and humble, that's what God says is being wise. Let's look at how pride affected one man's life and see what lesson we can derive from looking at it. Turn to 2 Chronicles chapter 26. 2 Chronicles chapter 26. And I'm going to be starting in verse 1, paraphrasing some of it, reading other scriptures as we go through the story. Chronicles 26, verse 1. Judah made Uzziah king at the tender age of 16. Quite a accomplishment for someone only 16 years old. And, verse 3, he reigned for 52 years. So he had a pretty long reign. When you look at the different term of years of the different reigns of the kings, this was one of the longer ones. Verse 4, and here was one of the reasons. And he did that which was right in the sight of the Eternal, according to all that his father Amaziah did. He was young, but he had paid attention to what his father was doing as he was governing. He looked at the decisions he made. He looked at how he did things. He looked at how he depended on other people. He looked at the people who gave him advice. And because of this, because he'd had a good template against which to base his own method of ruling, he did well. Verse 5, and also in addition to that, he sought God in the days of Zechariah. Zechariah, it says, had an understanding in the visions of God. And so he not only had paid attention to his father and what he did, but he also paid attention to the people his father had used, the people that he relied upon. And so he sought out Zechariah. And continuing on, as long as he sought the Lord, God made him to prosper. So right there is kind of a key to what happened with regard to his rulership. As long as he sought the Eternal, God made him to prosper. And he did this in a variety of ways. In verse 7, it said, God helped him against the Philistines and the Arabians. He was successful in war, in conquests, to the point that in verse 8, the Ammonites gave gifts to him, probably paying him to stay away from them because they didn't want to engage in war with him. They'd heard and they seen what had happened to these other nations. And because of this, it says his name spread abroad as far as Egypt, for he strengthened himself exceedingly. And jumping down to verse 15, he made in Jerusalem engines invented by cunning men. And so here again, he understood one of the principles of managing, that you never do it all yourself. You need to rely on other people. You need to be able to delegate. And when you see someone that's talented and capable, you try to use that person. In this case, these cunning men had a corner on the engines of war. And they showed him, if you put these up on the towers and upon the bulwarks, you're going to have an exceptional advantage over anyone coming against you because they're going to be so high, you're going to be able to throw them further. And they're going to be having to shield themselves, so they not only have to be concerned about something coming from the ahead as well as coming in front of them. So these men really understood and they knew how to devise effective weapons. And in any event, since he recognized that, he selected them to provide him with these engines of war. And it said his name spread far abroad, for he was marvelously helped till he was strong. Marvelously helped by God, of course, till he was strong. And that is what happens a lot of times with people when they're just starting off and they need help from other people and they can't rely on their own ingenuity to do different things because they don't have enough experience. They seek out help. But also, there's a danger in reaching a point where you feel so strong and you feel so much in charge and you feel so much like you know it all now. There's nothing that anyone can tell you. And it said in verse 16, but when he was strong, his heart was lifted up to his destruction. You know, as I said, at some point in his journey and as he became enshrouded in the with the sweet smell of success, he no longer probably conferred with Zechariah and God as well and became more reliant on his own strength and his own wisdom. Even though all of the blessings that he had received up until this point in time were derived directly from God and for which he should have been giving thanks to him. But instead, he transgressed against the Lord his God and went into the temple to burn incense upon the altar. And of course, here he was a functioning king. You know, we're called to be kings and priests. But there's a distinction between what a king does and what a priest does. And God had made that very clear. The priests had certain things they did. The rulers did other things. In verse 18, Uzziah tried to burn incense to God, even though he was warned it was the priest's duty. And in verse 19 to 20, he got mad at the priests and leprosy appeared on his forehead. And as a result, he was removed from the temple because the Lord had smitten him. And in verse 21 through 23, he was a leper until the date of his death, lived in a separate house, set aside for lepers, totally cut off from the house of the Lord. And if you look at his life, his rather dramatic and illustrious career fizzled at the end just like a shooting star. It has this great burst of light and energy, and then it just kind of fizzles out. And that was what happened with him. He died an ignominious death, succumbing to the pride of his accomplishments. Look at everything that I've done. I've got the stature now to be able to do what the priests do. That was the thought that ran through his mind. Turn to Proverbs 6, verse 18. A very well-known verse. You may know it by heart, but if you don't know it by heart, you certainly know the verse, Proverbs 6, verse 18, where we're told, pride goes before destruction, and a haughty spirit before a fall. You see someone that is proud. Somewhere down the line, there's going to be a fall. Can't guarantee when or where it's going to come from. But that's what God says. Pride goes before destruction, and a haughty spirit before a fall. Spiritual pride can be very dangerous. A good example of this is found in the parable of the Pharisee and the tax collector. Turn over to Luke 18, verse 9. Luke 18 and verse 9. And he spake this parable unto certain which trusted in themselves that they were righteous and despised others. Verse 10. Two men went up into the temple to pray, the one a Pharisee and the other a publican or a tax collector. Verse 11, the Pharisee stood and prayed thus within himself. God, I really thank you that I'm not as other men are. I'm not like Mr. Why. You know, he's sitting over here in the second row, just a few seats ahead of me. But, you know, he's an extortioner. I heard that he is blackmailing someone because of something that he found out that he did. And I'm not unjust like Mr. So-and-so over here, over to the side on my left. I just heard he foreclosed on two widows this last week and kicked them out of their homes. Or I'm not like Mr. Z and back of me, who I know is seeing someone else's wife. Adulterers, or even as this guy sitting on the very last row of the temple on the very back with his head bowed, this tax collector, why do you even allow him in here? you know, the tax collectors, they're at the very bottom of the food chain. The Pharisees' focus was not on God at all in this conversation, but on his goodness, as we'll see in the next verse, and others' weaknesses. Verse 12, you know, I'm really great. Do you know that I fast twice in a week? And you know for a fact, I know there are people in this congregation that fast once a year on the Day of Atonement. And sometimes, maybe not even then. But twice a week, times 52, 104, count them. I'm really great. And incidentally, last year I gave $157,000 to the work. There was kind of a loophole in the tax code, and it just came up last year, and so I was able to use it to pay that to the work. Boy, I'm really great because I give my tithes and I give my offerings. Verse 13, and the publican standing afar off in the very back of the temple, on the very back row, not even looking up, not even so much as raising his eyebrows, would not lift them up, his eyes unto heaven, but smote on his breast, saying, God, be merciful to me, a sinner. Have you ever been so distraught about something that's happened in your life? A death in the family, a divorce, losing your job or something, but something so totally devastating that you physically can almost feel what he was saying. You can feel that physical pain. It's really an emotional pain, but sometimes it manifests itself in a physical way that you just feel like, how come it happened to me? You know, why is this going on in my life? God, be merciful to me, a sinner. He was so painfully aware of his sins, he couldn't even lift his eyes up as he stood at the very back of the temple, far from the altar. Verse 14, Christ said, I tell you, this man went down to his house justified rather than the other. And then this next part of the verse is something that is a principle so profound and so true, and it goes back to something I said earlier. But you cannot violate this. For everyone that exalted himself shall be abased. A guarantee. You think you're proud about something? Wait. I'm not saying when it'll happen or how it'll happen. But Christ says everyone shall be abased that does this, that exalts himself. On the other hand, conversely, he that humbleth himself shall be exalted. He's serving quietly in the background. And maybe you never notice him because he's not out there. He's not the class A like the man I described a little earlier. But he's very effective. He's very efficient. He gets things done. Never says anything about it to anyone. He just does his job. He that humbleth himself shall be exalted. And this was directed at those who trusted in themselves because they thought they were righteous. They were quick to point out all the things that they did or were doing. and treated everyone else with contempt. Like I pointed out, this Pharisee sat in his congregation and he could pinpoint who was doing what. This is an example of spiritual pride. It can affect us all. It can affect members. It can affect church leaders. However, it's pride that's camouflaged as religion. But in reality, it's giving religion a bad rap, or Christianity a bad rap. I think we all know that the apostles were infected with pride, because they discussed quite openly among themselves who was the greatest. Who was the greatest among them? Turn to Luke 22, verse 24. Luke 22, verse 24. We'll touch on this. And there was also strife among them, which of them should be accounted the greatest? They weren't too concerned about the people that they were serving to, presumably. But they were sitting around comparing themselves and saying, well, you know, I think I should be doing this. I'm pretty good. And someone else says, well, you may be good, but I think I'm a little better. I'm not quite sure the tenor or how the conversation went. It reminds me a little bit, though, of Muhammad Ali, the great professional boxer, who, when he began, went by the name of Cassius Clay. And many of you who are a little older might remember the diatribes he'd go through. He'd say, I'm the greatest, I'm the greatest, I'm the greatest. And people thought that in some respects he did that to intimidate the boxers, that his opponents. And psychologically that probably entered into that. But the reality was, as proved by his boxing career, he was one of the greatest. It just shows that if the apostles struggled with this concept of who was going to be the greatest, then it's apparent that we, every one of us in this room, are susceptible to those same pulls as well. Go to Proverbs again. Proverbs 8. Verse 13. Proverbs 8 and verse 13. The fear of the Lord is to hate evil. Pride and arrogancy and the evil way and the froward mouth do I hate. You notice pride is right there behind evil. And arrogancy follows right behind as well. Why is pride listed there? And why is it so bad? Why is pride so evil? The essence of it, if you look at it, pride is self-worship. Where you're giving yourself the credit for something that God has accomplished in us. I mean, we're giving ourselves that credit when, in fact, the credit should go to God. Everything that we do in this life is possible only because God helps us. Everything. You've got your own native ability, the genes and chromosomes you were born with. That certainly enters in. But who put that mixture together? It wasn't you. Someone will say, well, is it wrong to feel pride in a job well done. Yes and no. I'd say yes if it goes to our heads and we have to call attention to how well we've done it. You know, if pride blinds us to where we think we have no need of God, like what happened to Uzziah, then yes, it is very wrong. On the other hand, it's not wrong if we have used God's laws in achieving whatever success it is we have, whether it be in our career or in other ways. If we acknowledge to ourselves that it was because of God's help, because of His principles, the way we use them in our lives, and that because of doing that, we were able to complete what we set out to accomplish. There's certainly nothing wrong in being proud of that. But you have to remember where you're giving the credit. Two Buddhist monks returned to their monastery after the rains, and they, on the way back, reached a river that was swollen with water, turbulent water. And in front of them on the banks was an extremely beautiful lady dressed in a delicate silk kimono. She was very distressed because of the fact she was unable to cross the river by herself. So without a second thought, the older monk swoops her into his arms, wades out into the water, crosses the river, and deposits her on the other side. And the two monks continue on their way in silence. 5 hours later, as they reach their destination, the younger monk, fuming, absolutely fuming under his breath, bursts out, "How could you do it? You touched a woman, and you know we're not allowed to do that." The older monk replied, "You know, I put her down 5 hours ago, but you are still carrying her with you." You know, there's an enormous amount of wisdom in his observation. Pride leads to self-righteousness, and you've seen the end result of that. Don't let it infect or affect you. If you are carrying anything now, drop it, forget it, and never, ever pick it up again.